frequency.
No, not frequency. Frequency.
Got some frequencies.
Yeah.
You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. This program is Frequency, and my name is Mayuko. Frequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a freeform mix of sound made by birds and humans inspired by birds. And we started today's show with a tune titled Bobolink by Sarah Lula McLaughlin. And it was from a compilation titled Professional Women Whistlers on Discs 1917 to 27. Bobolink is the name of a bird. The ornithological accuracy of this tune, I would say, is questionable. I don't know if bobolink actually sounds like that at all, but the fact that someone made a track specifically for bobolink, I think is cool. And it does sound like, you know, bobolink sounds like they're saying a lot of things. And so I guess maybe that's what the track was about. And I started my today's show with this track. Bobolink is because today that's the bird that we're going to talk about, among other things. It's a grassland bird nesting in our own neighborhood right now. So bobolink is one of the main characters of today's show. And we're going to dive into this heated topic of unleashed dogs in nature areas. You know, when I go birding, I often run into people who seem perfectly nice and friendly and say hi and everything on the trails, and yet their dogs are unleashed in the places where it's not allowed. And I always want to say something about it. I want to tell them that they're grassland birds like bobolink, who would be stressed out by their dog, and they may fail to breed their chicks. You know, they may be too scared and leave the nest and all that stuff. But I don't want to make people feel hurt or angry by saying those things, and I haven't figured out how to say anything. And so this experience has led me to wonder, can't we just have a conversation and not a confrontation? And so to tackle this question, I spoke with Heidi Bock. She's the Vice President of Conservation at Columbia Land Conservancy. The Columbia Land Conservancy is a nonprofit land trust that works with the community to conserve the farmland, forests, and wildlife habitats of Columbia County. They manage 10 conservation areas throughout the county, and dogs are a frequent visitor to their lands. So from her experience of working in conservation and managing these public nature areas, Heidi will share specific examples of wildlife that you can help thrive by leashing your dog and staying on the trails. And Heidi will also tell us about the CLC's signages and educational programs that are designed to encourage learning and compassion for wildlife and other people we meet on the trails. And Heidi's also a dog owner herself, so I thought she would be great to, you know, hear insights from on this specific matter. And we recorded this conversation at Ooms in Chatham. It's one of the Columbia Land Conservancy's properties. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Thanks for tuning in. This is Frequency.
Thanks for having me. So I'm Heidi Bock. I'm the Vice President of Conservation for the Columbia Land Conservancy. And I grew up here in Columbia County, and I've been with the organization for 18 years.
And could you also tell us what Columbia Land Conservancy is?
Yeah, of course. So the Columbia Land Conservancy is a nonprofit land trust, and our mission is to bring people together to conserve, appreciate, and enjoy the land. And we've been around for nearly 40 years. And we work with individuals, communities, and partners to ensure Columbia County remains beautiful, livable, and resilient. And one of the ways that we work to achieve our mission is with the 10 public lands that we own and manage throughout the county, like Ooms, where we're today. Mm-hmm. And these spaces are open daily, free of charge, from dawn till dusk.
And dogs are welcome at CLC properties, but there are some rules.
Yeah. So that's correct. So dogs are welcome at all of our properties. And we ask that people keep the dogs leashed and pick up after them and carry out the waste mm-hmm. from the site.
Right. Which isn't always the reality. And I really wanted to talk to you about this because I just want to find a way to like talk about this without like getting mad or making people mad.
Yeah.
Because it's really just not necessary, I feel. And how I really came to this question was maybe this past winter, January or February or something like that, I was taking a walk at Rogan Park in Hillsdale, and that place has a big field too. Mm-hmm. And I would come across dog walkers all the time and started feeling anxious about, well, woodcocks are coming back soon.
Right.
And then eventually the other ground nesting birds will come back. And in February, I was like, maybe I'll say something in March.
Right.
And then March came and I was thinking, maybe I'll say something in April. Like it's going to be the prime breeding time and maybe that's when I'll say something. But it just makes me so nervous to even think of like even talk to strangers is not easy.
Right.
No matter how politely you say it, it just doesn't feel, nobody feels good to be told you're doing anything wrong, even if I don't mean to hurt their feelings. It's just how we, you know,
react. Yeah. And it's something that I think all organizations and like, you know, state properties that own land that allow dogs struggle with a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have signs up and we have, you know, the rules posted, and, you know, everybody thinks that their dog is okay off leash. And the thing is that, you know, one of the reasons that we ask people to leash their dogs is, you know, our properties we use as nature classrooms for our education program. So our educator brings groups of children and, you know, larger groups of people to the sites. And, you know, people might not want an unknown dog running up to them. And, you know, kids can sometimes be scared of dogs or, you know, the kids can scare dogs. You know, that you don't know what somebody's dog is going to react in a situation like that. And so, you know, we want people to be able to enjoy nature. We want all people to be able to enjoy nature. And, you know, many people use our properties to go for walks and bird watch. And, you know, it's just one of those things. We really ask people to respect each other on the trails. And that includes leashing your dog. And, you know, having dogs on leash also, like to your point about the woodcocks and ground nesting birds, it minimizes the impact to wildlife, and not just to birds, because, you know, there's lots of other things that call these places home that if you have your dog on leash, you don't have to worry about them running into other wildlife. So, you know, you don't want to be out here and have your dog come into contact with a porcupine or a skunk. You don't want to ride home in a car with a dog that's been sprayed by a skunk.
Yes, I heard it's really horrible. I,
knock on wood, I have not encountered it. Like, my dog has not encountered a skunk. But yeah, exactly. And so it's both for the safety of the wildlife and for the safety of your dog. We maintain the trails, and then the rest of the properties we leave as wild as possible to provide that habitat. And so we don't know what's out in those fields. There could be groundhog holes. We don't want you or your dog getting injured. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have the trails marked. And yeah, and like I said, you know, in addition to porcupines and skunks, mm-hmm. there's lots of other animals like fox and squirrels, chipmunks, that call this place home. And the less we can disturb them, the better. Like, that's part of our mission as a conservation organization, mm-hmm. is to provide habitat.
Mm-hmm. And having those educational programs around nature at your property must help, because that's, I think, the challenge. Because you can't see them, mm-hmm. you stay on the trail, you look at the field, like, you have no idea what's in there. And because you can't see it, it looks as if it's all empty. And that was my personal experience too before becoming a birder. Mm-hmm. I'd never heard of birds like, for example, bobolink. When I saw the name, I didn't even know how to pronounce it. It's like bobolink, like, what the heck is that?
Right.
And they're everywhere. In the season, mm-hmm. like, you see, they're not super hidden, but even then, to be given the specificity of, like, what's out there, what they look like, and what they do, having that knowledge makes your, like, literally your eyes open to those existences. So,
yeah, I think that's particularly true of the bobolink, that similarly, I wasn't super aware of them, you know, when I first started working for the Land Conservancy. And as I became more, you know, more knowledgeable about the grassland birds and things like that, when you come to Ooms this time of year and you hear them, like, once you know what you're hearing, mm-hmm. you just hear it everywhere. And mm-hmm. then you can see, like, you know, it's the males are much more apparent. You know, they sit up at the top of grass and they're black and white and they're pretty distinct. And then their call, which I've heard people refer to, it sounds like R2-D2 from Star Wars. It's like, yes. Sort of metallic-y, bubbly sounding.
Yeah.
And yeah, so when you walk around the fields here, you hear that. And like you're saying, once you know what to either look for or hear for, you're going to start noticing it more. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, you know, it sort of all blends together and you're not really aware of, like, where the sound is coming from or what they might be doing. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the challenge is, you know, at least with some of the grassland birds, is the females are brown. and you can't see them generally, mm-hmm. and they're in the grass. So, right. yeah, I think education is a big part of it, and something that, you know, we try to provide opportunities for people to get out and learn more about what we have here, how we're, you know, working to manage the property to allow for people to come and enjoy it, but also provide habitat for the for species that are in decline, like the grassland birds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't want to blame people for not knowing, you know, what's out there, right. especially since I was that person not so long ago, only like, you know, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So really wanted to bring more information to people, and I was hoping to do that on the on this radio show too. Well, so maybe you could give us some specific examples. You said porcupine, there's skunk, and then we mentioned bobwinks.
Well, there's lots of little critters that are out in the fields that, you know, play a role in the ecosystem, like moles and voles and, you know, things that are good food sources for the hawks that we see flying over, or the kestrel mm-hmm. that, you know, we have a kestrel box here. And so I think the advantage of the conservation areas and the and public lands like Ooms is that if you don't own a lot of land, these areas provide you with an opportunity to come and, you know, be out in nature and experience kind of the wildlife that that is here in Columbia County.
Mm-hmm.
And
moles and voles are good examples too. Mm-hmm. I saw one dead mole, I believe. Somebody left it, well, some bird
right.
left it on top of the bluebird nest box over
oh,
there.
Oh, really?
I think it's gutted the organ
right,
out.
Right.
So the outer part of the body was like just placed on top of
maybe
the
saving
nest
it
box.
For later.
Yes, possibly.
Midnight snack.
It's like I saw the dead mole,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see the living mole.
Right.
Like I sometimes see some tiny things like rustling around
yeah.
on the ground, like trying to hide away from me, but I can't tell what they are. And
in winter, you sometimes can. Like if we ever get snow again, you know, and sometimes in the snow, you can see the paths underneath
oh.
the snow, and those
mm-hmm.
are the moles and voles moving underneath the snow.
Ah.
But yeah, this time of year, you know, once everything has started to grow, it's really hard to see some of those little critters. Although I did see a squirrel a few minutes ago run around. So
well, squirrels are
yeah.
not being very careful about
no.
any predators or cars or anything, really.
No, they're...
You're listening to Frequency on Waveforms, WGXC 90.7 FM. If you're just joining us, today's guest is Heidi Bach, the Vice President of Conservation at Columbia Land Conservancy. She tells us about birds and other wildlife that we can help thrive by leashing our dogs and staying on trails.
When we talk about dogs, it usually the typical, you know, counter argument being, well, the dogs are, my dog is very well trained, mm-hmm. my dog is friendly, they're good with kids and all that stuff. But even the best dog in the universe can be a threat to, like, little things like mole. Like, mole doesn't get your friendliness.
Right.
They're just afraid of, like, even barking or the smell of the dog. All that stuff can really stress the wildlife out.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not just, I mean, and you know, there's definitely dogs that will chase wildlife. You know, it's just their nature. And things like even rabbits or...
Yeah, rabbits.
So, yeah, some of the other smaller mammals, it's not just the chasing that's mm-hmm. the problem. It can disturb if they, you know, have young and they might not return back to the den or that kind of thing. So it's, and you said their smell, the dog's smell can often alert small animals that there's a threat around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and, you know, understanding obviously that there's, like I said, fox and coyote and things like that, but that's part of the natural life cycle of these animals. So mm-hmm. even though dogs are, you know, related to coyotes, it's not the same thing because they're sort of introducing a threat that isn't part of their normal, like
right.
the animal's normal
right.
system. So it's really part of the reason we have the trails placed where we do on the sites. We try to limit the impact we have on the sites when we create the trails. And in doing so, asking people to stay on the trails, including with their dogs.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not so much about the dog being a good dog or a bad dog.
Right.
It's just dog being dog.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And dog can't help it.
Right. Right. So. And we want everybody to, you know, enjoy their experience here. Mm-hmm. And I know that is sometimes the argument of people is that, well, my dog needs to run.
Right.
And I get it. I, like you said, I have a dog and I know she loves to run around, but there's places in the county, you know, like there's dog parks and things like that that are built for dogs.
Right. Where you don't have to worry about
right, exactly.
your dog doing any harm to other little creatures yeah. or big creatures even.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's also, like I said earlier, just being respectful to your, you know, other trail users that, you know, you don't know if somebody, your dog may be the friendliest dog in the world, but if somebody has a fear or a phobia or an allergy, you just want everybody to be able to enjoy. And that means respecting the rules that we have and, mm-hmm. you know, people's, the way that they want to interact with nature.
Right. Yeah. Allergy and phobia and stuff, that's another thing that's not visible from outside.
Right.
You just don't know what's going on. Just like in the field.
Yeah.
So that's another very good point.
And another, I think another thing more related to the dogs is that you don't know, like if you have, my dog, I always tell, she's an overenthusiastic greeter. She's, she likes to, you know, bark and she's friendly, but it can be scary to other dogs. Mm-hmm. And so I try to, when I'm out with her, I go to the side of the trail, let the other person pass, because you don't know what that dog's dealing with. It could be in training. It could be new to the, you know, environment. And so allow, you know, being able to, you know, not every dog wants to meet another dog.
Right.
And just keeping that in mind too, when you're here walking your dog might be the friendliest dog in the world, but the other dog might be nervous and scared and you don't want to have them have a bad experience either.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we mentioned bobolink and I think mm-hmm. it's a good example of ground nesting birds. And when people hear bird nest, typically, even when I did a Google image search, the whole nest comes up is either on top of a tree or like underneath the roof or like mm-hmm. somewhere higher up. We don't imagine, if you're not a birder, to be like just sitting on the ground.
Right.
And that's what pretty much bobolink do. And so I wanted to talk about this particular bird because right now is kind of the nesting season mm-hmm. that they're here in Ooms Conservation also.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I wanted to know like how they're doing like last year and this year, like this maybe like current situation of bobolink, like how many, like do you have a way to estimate how many are here and how many nests are out there?
We haven't studied it recently. A number of years ago, an intern did an initial study. I think this was maybe 2015, and wasn't looking specifically at nests, but was out doing sort of point counts on, you know, just number of birds throughout the property. Mm. And we're hoping to partner with the Berkshire Bird Observatory to do some nest counts this summer and maybe start a regular field study around this, because we don't know. We know that the birds are here because mm-hmm. we see them and hear them. We know both a number of different grassland birds, ground nesting birds, use Ooms. Mm-hmm. We don't know how many and how successful they are. Mm-hmm. So that's something we want to start looking at as we're actively managing this property for grassland birds. Is what we're doing working? Or mm-hmm. if it's not, or if, you know, there's something we could be doing better, we want to incorporate that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know from the time that I have been with the Land Conservancy, we've noticed more birds here, but we don't have a definitive mm-hmm. number.
But your experience being, people's experience being,
yeah,
seeing more birds.
Definitely. And I think the Alan DeVoe Bird Club does a lot of bird walks here and collects data and puts it in eBird, mm-hmm. and through that we've definitely seen mm-hmm. an increase in the grassland nests, the grassland birds that use the site.
Mm-hmm. It must be tricky to find the nests of bobolink and I guess meadowlarks.
Yep, we have meadowlarks here, and I think we saw Savannah sparrows.
Oh, nice.
A couple weeks ago when we were here. Mm-hmm. And right, yeah, I mean, I think the Berkshire Bird Observatory, their executive director, Ben Nickley, has experience doing nest surveys. So mm-hmm. we're excited to partner with them.
Ben is a trained person who can walk into a field without
correct
like
yes.
making threats to wildlife.
Yeah, so he knows exactly what he's doing and right. and he's done scientific research around it. So it's yeah, he would be a trained scientist going out into the field.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I wanted to ask you was the mowing practice mm-hmm. here at Ooms.
Yeah, so we changed the way that we manage the fields around 2016. And Ooms is about 180 acres, and it's mostly open fields with a large pond, Sutherland Pond, in the middle of it. And we, based on research that had come out, that had been coming out around that time and a little bit earlier, there was the best management practices for grassland birds was to either do rotational mowing so that you're not cutting down the entire property at the same time. So we took the property and broke it into thirds, mm-hmm. and we mow each section every 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so what that does is it keeps the woody vegetation, so it keeps the shrubs from coming in and the trees, and they create, it allows the grasses to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. So what we've done here is we contract out that work. So there is some research in Massachusetts and Vermont and some programming there that actually will pay the farmers to delay their mowing. Because that's a challenge, is that a lot of these big open fields, farmers need for hay. Mm-hmm. They need it to feed their cattle or their livestock, and they can't, the recommendation is to not mow until after some of the research says July 15th, a lot of it says after August 15th. And at that point, and that what that does is it allows the birds to lay their nest, to lay their eggs, and the young to fledge. Mm-hmm. So they're old enough to go and survive on their own. And delaying mowing to August 15th for farmers, what's left in the field isn't very good quality feed for livestock. And so there is a program called the Bobolink Project. It's not available here in New York yet, but basically what it does is it allows farmers to delay their mowing by paying them to not mow, and then they can use that to buy hay from maybe a field that wouldn't be good grassland bird habitat. Because not every field is good grassland bird habitat either. They need at least 10 to 15 acres, depending on the species. Bobolinks, my understanding, if I'm remembering correctly, is they need smaller, they can utilize smaller fields, like 10 to 15 acre fields. Some of the other birds, like the meadowlark, need 20 to 25 acre fields. And I think there's other ones that even require bigger fields. And the thinking is if, you know, the bigger the field, you're going to accommodate more variety of grassland birds. Mm-hmm. So what we've done here is, like I said, we've broken it into three different zones, and we hire somebody to come and mow those. Typically after, we actually wait usually till about September 1st to make sure that everybody's gotten out and is able to migrate. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Bequency on Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. If you're just joining us, today's guest is Heidi Bach, the Vice President of Conservation at Columbia Land Conservancy. And she's telling us about birds and other wildlife that we can help thrive by leashing our dogs and staying on trails.
That's another thing that the conversation doesn't go any forward when, you know, people just blaming other people's practice. Mm-hmm. It's kind of easy to vilifying other people, and there's so much of that conversation out there in the United States right now. And so it's never that simple. People often have good reasons to what they need to do. Mm-hmm. People may not want to do it sometimes even, but they feel like they have to. And really, just to like come up with a solution as to like, well, how about this? Like maybe you can do this little part or that mm-hmm. little part. And Columbia Land Conservancy made that change also, to not just asking for dog owners or other people to change their behavior, but you change your own operation
to basically do better.
Yeah.
For the environment of wildlife.
Totally. And we're constantly learning. And that's the, you know, the thing here is, like I said, we think what we're doing is, you know, it's based on science and, but that's only part of it because, you know, there's, we want to make sure that the grass that's growing is the best type of grass for the birds. And so mm-hmm. I think it's, I'm sorry, there's a chipmunk behind you just like having the best time ever.
Uh-huh. I know. When I do an interview outside, there's so much distraction. People get distracted all the time. Like, I was thinking earlier when you were talking, like, maybe I heard a cuckoo.
I think that is.
That is cuckoo.
Yeah.
I'm like, focus. Okay, good.
I mean, you seem very focused, and I'm like,
I'm trying to focus. Okay, but I was a little distracted.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'm glad. That makes me feel better. What was your last question?
CLC changed the operation. And learning. You were constantly learning.
Yeah, and one of the things that we really want to use these public lands for is demonstration properties and like, you know, helping landowners learn from what we're doing, both successes and mistakes. If there's something that we do and we're like, oh, that didn't work, we want to share that too, because mm-hmm. we want to be able to use the resources that we have to share with other people so that, you know, we can help mm-hmm. provide the education around, like, management in particular. Mm-hmm. And
that's really the reality. Like, no shaming not knowing.
Right.
No shaming making mistakes. Because there's just so many factors, like you said, about the size of the field and depends on the species and all that stuff. It's all very, like, lots of factors making this, you know, mosaic of the situation. And so it's never straightforward as to, you don't do this, you do this, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
It's never that kind of conversation. It shouldn't be that kind of conversation.
No, we want, and you know, I think as, if somebody is doing something really cool on their property and want to share that, we're happy to, you know, help them showcase that too. We want it to be this collaborative learning mm-hmm. opportunity.
Right. And even somebody's solution that works for somebody's situation doesn't necessarily work for your field or for your land. So
right.
That's another
and
complexity.
That's totally true that, you know, it depends on scale. It depends on the resources that you have. It depends. Yeah, there's so, like you were saying, there's so many factors that go into it. And so being able to show a variety of management techniques and learn from each other, I think, is really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't think you know everything.
Yeah.
And it's okay to not know everything. Just ask other people's inputs.
Exactly.
And assess the situation.
Yeah, otherwise it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You know, and our staff has a wide variety of backgrounds and skills. Mm-hmm. And you know, we try to utilize all of those, but we know we're not the experts on everything. We know a lot of people, and we know, you know, in the county and sort of in the natural resource management world, we know who to call about things. And so we don't claim to be experts,
mm-hmm.
but we try to use the best available data and mm-hmm. management practices. And yeah, and like I said, just sharing that with other people.
I find that really pleasant about the world of natural science in general. Mm-hmm. People allow themselves to make mistakes and allow themselves to not know something, so you can ask other people. And that's sort of what I find during the birding too. Like, it's got this sort of relaxed atmosphere as to, like, let you ask questions. Maybe it's my particular bird group has that atmosphere also.
I think that's something we try to foster with our educational programs too, definitely, is that we're all learning. I mean, nature is so complex. Like, there's so much happening and so much to observe and see that we want it to be more of an exploration. And
seeing experts having that attitude really enlightened me mm-hmm. personally. They don't always say they know. They don't hesitate.
They
to
have
say,
their field
oh,
guides with them. Yeah,
yeah,
that's so true.
Let me ask
yep.
when they don't know. So that's really
yeah.
great. And that's sort of the attitude I want everybody to have, because it's so much easier to live that way, first of all. And dog owners can feel a little more relaxed about, it's okay, like, we're not here to shame you, but mm-hmm. just want you to know that this is what's happening, and, you know, just let us all learn.
Yeah, and I've talked to a few people who, when they've approached dog owners with their dog off leash, when they've approached that person with more of a question or you know, saying, you know, did you know that there's grassland nesting birds here? Mm. And talked about the fact that they're, you know, they might not have gone into the detail of, oh, their grasslands are in decline and these birds are threatened. Mm-hmm. But just even talking about the fact that there's a special type of bird that nests on the ground, mm-hmm. that oftentimes people are more willing to put their dog on leash because, like you were saying, they don't know.
That's what I kind of imagine the reaction will be. Anyhow, so that leads to the next question of, you know, any new major you're experimenting to work on this concern about unleashed dogs?
Yeah, so we have, we've got some signs on order from a sign, you know, we've created some signs around the grassland birds specifically. Because this, knowing that this time of year is a really important time for mm-hmm. the grassland birds, we're going to put some temporary signage up near the fields. At the entrance and at our kiosk, we have our rules around, you know, what's the dog leash policy. And I think sometimes it's helpful to have reminders throughout the site. So what mm-hmm. we're going to try to do in the next few weeks is put up some signage that specifically talks about the grassland birds and why it's important to keep your dog leash specifically for that reason. And so hopefully that'll help, because I think it's easy to not think about it once you leave the parking lot.
Mm-hmm. So it's easy to be carried away by something.
By a chipmunk.
Yeah, by a chipmunk. So there was that sign where we walked in mm-hmm. that says, both English and Spanish, that mm-hmm. says, please leash your dog.
Yep.
The signs you're talking about is separate from those
Correct.
Signs.
Yeah, so these will be more specific about why you should leash your dog. Mm-hmm. So it'll have information about it. They're not, it's not super detailed, but it will talk about, you know, there's bubble link here. And these birds nest on the ground mm-hmm. and dogs off leash can have a really negative impact. Mm-hmm. It says it more eloquently than that, but that's mm-hmm. the gist of it. And it'll be in areas where we know there are nesting birds.
Right at the spot.
Yes. So mm-hmm. like at a trail intersection where we know within those fields there are mm-hmm. Nesting birds. And hopefully that'll just be a reminder to people, like, mm-hmm. please leash your dog.
Mm-hmm. Does it have text on?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like any photos on?
I believe we put a photo of a bobolink because they're so pretty.
Yeah. The male. I think that would be helpful because bobolink is kind of a funny looking bird. It's wearing a wig over. It's like a blonde wig.
Yeah, no, I've heard people refer to it as, it looks like it's wearing a backwards tuxedo because it's like front is all black and then it's back. It's like it's got a tuxedo on backwards.
Dressed wrong.
It is a very distinct bird.
Yeah.
And I think, like we were saying earlier, once you see it, you're going to start seeing it everywhere. Like once you know what you're looking at, they're very...
It's a kind of a likable bird because of that humorous look to it. So once you come to like him or her...
Right.
She's not very visible.
She's not very visible.
But you might come to like him a lot,
yeah.
which I have. So that might help the people.
Yeah, yes, yeah. I think so. Yeah, so there's definitely an image and then text explaining more why. Mm. So that coming soon, hopefully in the next 2 weeks.
And do you know, how do you expect to measure the effect of these signs?
I think, you know, our staff and like I said, volunteers are out here pretty regularly.
And so they would monitor.
I think we will be able to have sort of a not a scientific study, but more of an anecdotal. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it also provides an opportunity to, you know, point out the signs when we have public programs here as a reminder. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it just provides an additional point of information for people that when they come back, or you know, when they, you know, if they bring their dog back here, they'll just be like, oh right, there's that sign that says mm-hmm. you know, there's birds nesting here, let's be
mindful. I love the idea. It also helped people to be like, okay, bobolink is here. Let's try to look.
Yeah.
Not just about the, you know, well, please don't do this sort of message, but please try this. You might see it here because they live here. Well, so last question is, like, what do you think, is there anything listeners can do to help your effort on this concern of dogs?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, like we've been talking about, is sharing and spreading the word about grassland birds. So, you know, talking about learning more about the grassland nesting birds and the challenges that they face, coming to our programs that we have where, you know, we've got a number of programs this summer coming up and, you know, the Allen DeVoe Bird Club has bird walks that they're hosting, going to those types of programs just to learn more. And I mentioned earlier some of the volunteers that we have. Volunteering with us is a great way to learn more about how we're managing the sites and becoming more active in helping to manage and get out on the trails and meet people. And then I think, I guess I'm just keep coming back to our education programs and learning more, because like you were saying in your experience, the more you know, it provides just that added layer of information for when you're walking around a place that...
And you'll have more fun.
And you have more fun, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want it to be fun.
Mm-hmm. And where can people find those information of the events?
Yeah, so our website is columbialand.org. And at the top, there's an events button, and you just click that. And you can sign up for our email list to get emails about the events. And then we're also on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn, I think. Yeah.
Great. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Bobolink.
You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM, and this program is Frequency, a show about birds and bird people in Hudson Valley. I'm talking over a bird field recording collage piece created by Christopher Funkhauser, my fellow programmer here on WGXC, who hosts Poet Radio Words and Sounds, which airs on Thursdays. Of the month at 7 p.m. And we just heard a field recording of bobolink that, like Heidi mentioned, people say sounds like R2-D2 from Star Wars. And I play that recording off of Stokes Field Guide to Bird Songs, Eastern Region. Huge thanks to Heidi Bach for this wonderful interview. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. We recorded it at OOMS in Chatham, one of the Columbia Land Conservancy's properties, where you can easily see and hear bobolinks if you go there now. So I hope you visit and meet them if you haven't done so already. And I hope you will help them by talking about them. Because I think we need more good faith conversations inspired by curiosity and care. And information can empower us to change our behaviors within. So, I mean, if we choose to do so, that is... Anyhow, Heidi mentioned Ben Nickley from Berkshire Bird Observatory in the conversation, who is doing some bird surveys in their properties. And Ben will be my guest on next month's episode of this show, Frequency. So I hope you come back and tune in. It'll air on the fourth Saturday of June, which is the 22nd at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And even if you miss it, or if you're curious about my past interviews with a bunch of other wonderful local bird people here in the Hudson Valley, you can listen to them at bequency@tumblr.com. Bequency, like beak and frequency. Bequency@tumblr.com. Speaking of past guests, Eric Losh, a wildlife illustrator who I interviewed on this show, Bequency, he's leading a bird walk on June 1st, which is Saturday, and it's at 8 a.m., and the location is the Claremont State Historic Site. You can find more information on www.alandevobirdclub.org. alandevobirdclub.org. And I'm gonna play another track titled Bobolink, and this one is by Australian guitarist Tim Cunningham. And then we'll hear a track titled Osprey by Scottish folk musician Bert Jange. Thanks for listening. This is Bequency on Wavefarms WGXC. Thank you. That was Osprey by Bert Jansch from his 1979 album Avocet. You know, last weekend I was at Olana in Hudson and I was chatting with a local ornithologist Bill Cook in the parking lot, and we saw four ospreys circling above us. And from Bill, I learned that that is called kettling. They were in the kettle, which is what they do when they are about to take a long flight, like migration. The birds travel on thermals. Thermals are columns of warm air rising from the ground. The raptors will soar, gaining altitude in the thermal, set their wings, and glide to the next thermal. This means they use little energy in flight. When a group of birds is soaring on the thermals, it is called a kettle. I just read this explanation of kettle from the website of Johnson Nature Center in Michigan. So ospreys were in the kettle over the parking lot of Olana, and they were, you know, getting higher and higher, smaller and smaller. And when I see hawks kettling like that, I always feel as if I'm seeing someone off at an airport. It's like they're taking a long journey, but I'm left behind here. I'm feeling a little lonely, but excited for their long journey. And it's such a beautiful sight. So I wanted to play this track called Osprey today that reminds me of how they soar. And ahead of that, we heard Tim Cunningham. Bobolink was the title of the track from his album, Birds, an album that came out in 2022. And we still have a tiny bit amount of time left, so I would like to play another track by Bert Jansch. This one is titled Bittern, just because there were sightings of American bittern earlier this month at Drowned Land Swamp in Ankrum, which is another Columbia Land Conservancy's property. But that will be it for my show today. This program has been Bequency, and I have been Mayuko. If you're interested in listening to the past episode of this show, again, you can find them at bequency@tumblr.com. You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. Coming up next is The Countdown, produced by Tom Rowe, counting down 10 new sounds, stories, or songs, American Top 40 style. Usually the top 10 is recent songs, but sometimes they're some thematic countdowns or local music theme show. So don't go anywhere. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful rest of the weekend.